Where might you be creating a bottleneck in your business by holding on to decisions your team is ready to make without you? Welcome back to Think Like a CEO, a special series on the Elite Achievement Podcast. If you've ever been told to think like a CEO, but weren't sure what that actually means, this series is for you. We're going behind the scenes with real CEOs, leaders who've built 7- and 8-figure businesses, to unpack the mindset shifts, leadership habits, and strategic decisions that fueled their growth. You're about to hear how real CEOs think so you can evolve your identity, elevate your leadership, and start making decisions that create long-term impact. Shirley Williani knows this leadership challenge firsthand. After returning from a sabbatical, her team told her they felt stuck, that every decision still ran through her. It was a turning point. Instead of holding on tighter, she created a decision matrix that empowered her team and allowed her to step fully into the CEO role, focusing on vision, culture, and growth. With over 30 years of experience, Shirley has grown her firm, A La Carte Solutions, into a national practice serving middle market businesses and nonprofits. She's passionate about showing leaders how finance and HR can drive profitability and how empowering the right people creates lasting success. Welcome to the show, Shirley.
Hi, Kristen. Thanks so much for having me. This is going to be so much fun.
Shirley, I want to start with a question I ask every guest. What does achieving elite success mean to you both personally and professionally?
Oh, wow. I mean, it's actually pretty simple to me, right? I think personally, elite success means having the time to and room, right? Mind space, if you will, to really enjoy the things that life has to offer, right? The things that bring you fulfillment and give you passion. And on the professional side, honestly, for me, I think it's different for everyone, but for me, success on the profession side is really seeing people underneath me, people that I've groomed and, you know, helped to lift up, realizing their own potential. So that's what came up for me when you asked me that question, Kristen.
I appreciate the first answer, having the time and the room, as you said, mind space to enjoy the things life has to offer. As a CEO, I'm sure it can be challenging to have those moments of joy because there's probably always something else you can be thinking about in the business or you're navigating different leadership challenges. Is there anything that you do to shut it off so you can truly enjoy the things life has to offer?
I wouldn't say I do anything to shut it off, but the one thing that came to mind when you were asking me that question is, you know, how much I really rely on my team. And so I think the key is hiring the right people and learning to empower them so that you can trust them to make decisions without you, so that you can semi shut it off, right? If and when you want to and you need to. So I think, you know, good CEOs are always surrounded by people that are better than them, smarter than them in many, many ways. And I think that's, for me at least, that's the key.
That's a really helpful perspective, Shirley. So let's go back to the beginning of your career. How did you get to the CEO role?
Yeah. Gosh, it's kind of a longer story. I started my career in accounting. My father was a serial entrepreneur. He struggled a lot with many of his businesses. And so I grew up really just wanting to figure out how to help him. And it seemed like accounting was one of those things that, you know, as the language of business, it's probably a good thing to know, right? And I didn't really know what it was. And so really out of just curiosity, I took an accounting class at a community college, and I did really, really well. It came easy to me. You know, it was a quick 5-week, like one whole semester, but in condensed into 5 weeks, and it just, you know, clicked for me. So I took another class and another class. And, you know, before I knew it, I had a bachelor's degree in accounting. And so from there, you know, I started my career at KPMG, well-known, you know, international accounting firm, got my CPA license, and went back to school, got my master's in business, and really just worked my way up from controller, VP of finance to CFO for a pretty large $180 million commercial construction company. And at the time, this was back in 2010, the company was struggling and I was not very happy in my role, not just because of the company I was working for, but really starting to doubt whether or not accounting and finance was going to be my long-term thing. And so I just saw a potential opportunity to where I could, you know, offer my salary up to this struggling business that I was working for, and at the same time, take some time to explore who I really want to be when I grow up. So I put my own name on the layoff list, and I convinced the CEO of that commercial construction company to hire me back as a fractional CFO. And so I did that for like 6 years and trying to figure out what I wanted to do with my life. And one day a client called me up and said that they had just lost their controller, which is a mid-level accounting person. And it's a second person who's quit on them in that role in 6 months. And can I help? And when I looked at the job description, I knew exactly the problem. He was looking for a unicorn. He was looking for someone who had the skill sets of a bookkeeper 30% of the time, the skill sets of a controller 30% of the time, and the skill sets of a high-level chief financial officer who's going to, you know, push the limits and work on forecasting and budgeting and reporting to the board. Right. And as hopefully you can tell just by the way I'm describing it, that those are three very different skill sets, personalities, experience levels, education levels, blood types, if you will. And so in that moment, I sort of pitched him this idea of having a three-person fractional accounting team made up of a part-time bookkeeper, controller, CFO, who would then work together to become his entire controller, if you will. And before I knew it, I had hired those two people and I was running a company. And that was back in 2016. So that's really how the whole thing started.
I'm curious, when you launched your company, it sounds like you didn't have a business plan. So how did you have the courage to pitch this idea before you had it fully laid out or even had the people in mind that you were going to hire?
You know, I think having business plans in some ways is overrated. You know, it's not a bad idea to plan, but you also have to be super agile, right? Because you can't plan everything. And the only thing that's for sure is change. And so, you know, to me, I just really focused on trying to solve this guy's problem. Yeah, you know, and I just... You know, I felt his pain and I knew I could solve it. And so I wasn't very focused on what is, you know, 5 years from now going to look like. It was more like just, you know, one day at a time, one step at a time, trying to bring value and truly help this guy who, you know, there's hundreds of him just like him trying to, you know, solve the same problem. And so, yeah, I you know, I think in my head, I knew that I wanted to run a business and I wanted to be out of the day-to-day finance and accounting client work. So I knew long term that I wanted to create something that would, you know, survive and thrive without me in the, you know, service seat, if you will. But that's pretty much all I knew really at the time, to be completely honest.
I think that sounds freeing. And Shirley, I started my business much the same way. A financial advisor I had coached when I was coaching in a corporate office, he had moved offices and he called me and said, I want you to be my coach. And I told him, what are you talking about? I don't do that. He said, no, I'm going to hire you to be my coach. I said, no, I don't think you understand. I don't do that. And a few months later, he called me back and said, okay, I'm going to hire you. Whatever you're going to charge, we have to talk. And I thought, well, maybe I'll take this seriously. And I was like you. I didn't have a coaching framework. I didn't have everything fully baked. I had a conversation, figured out what he needed, knew I could solve the problem, offered up a number, and he became my very first client. And I really credit, you know, him for giving me the courage to see that I could do this before I had it within myself.
Yeah, I think so much of life is about being open to opportunities and recognizing them, you know, I like to talk about these big boulders that we tend to throw onto the road ahead of ourselves. And those boulders represent our fears, our assumptions, our limiting beliefs that block our path forward. And we see those boulders as, you know, I can't go through that. I can't go around it. I can't, you know, I just have to wait. I just have to, you know, deal with what I have in front of me. And I think part of success, to be honest, with, you know, in life and business is recognizing when we have thrown our own boulders ahead of ourselves and blocking our own paths. And I think these opportunities, when they come along, you know, your colleague who told you, hey, you can coach me, right? That was kind of like a flag that said, hey, Kristen, there's a boulder here, right? Or my client coming to me and saying, you know, we need a 3-person team, right? So I think part of it is just like being able to recognize, just having the awareness that you are limiting yourself is like the big thing. So while you give credit to him, it's really you, Kristen, that had the courage to recognize that you had thrown this boulder out in front of you and then having the courage to, you know, make it disappear and turn into sand.
Thank you for that. I appreciate that that comment, Shirley. So let's stay on this theme of boulders. Were there any boulders in your way as you became the CEO? When did you see yourself as a true CEO?
Yeah, there were a ton of boulders. You know, to answer your question, it was beginning of 2024. So about, you know, now 2 years ago, I had actually just come back from taking a pretty long vacation / sabbatical from the business. And my team pulled me aside and you know, had a tough conversation with me. They basically told me that they felt stuck, that I was a bottleneck. And that, you know, they wanted to move forward with decisions, but felt like I had to be involved in every decision. And they didn't feel empowered. They didn't feel like they had the authority to make those decisions without me. And so, you know, at that point, I was like, wow, this is amazing that I've built a team that has the courage and confidence to have this kind of tough conversation with me. So that felt really good. But at the same time, it was like, oh God, that's, you know, I'm like a bottleneck in my own business. Like that is the worst thing that could happen. And so in that moment, I felt like, okay, you know, I got to rise to the occasion and get out of everybody's way. I've hired these amazing people. I've surrounded myself with people that are smarter than me and better than me in so many ways. Let me get out of their way. And I think that is really the moment where I felt that I had what it took to lead. And, you know, I think my ability to do that, recognize, you know, that that's something that I needed to do. And then just doing it. I mean, it wasn't easy, but that was the moment.
What does your day-to-day look like now versus back then when you were, as your team said, a bottleneck in the business?
Yeah. So back then, you know, I was involved in every decision, right? If we had a client that was, you know, being an a-hole, if we, you know, wanted to give a discount to a client, if we wanted to hire a staff accountant level person, right? I had to be involved in all of those decisions. I had to be involved in the interview process. I had to be involved in the, you know, conversation with a client about, you know, keeping them or not keeping them or giving them a discount. So that's, you know, that's really what the reality was at the time. Today, I actually created a decision matrix that helps my team know what decisions they can make on their own, what decisions to tell me about before they make them, and what decisions, you know, they can sort of make on their own, but I just want to know that they're making them. And so with that decision matrix, I'm able to focus on the things that, you know, really matter long term: vision, strategy, culture. I do quite a bit of the sales and marketing for the business still. And so my role is really future focused. And my team, my executive team, is really running the day to day.
Let's talk more about this decision matrix. I feel like this is something that could help so many leaders, so many business owners.
Yeah.
How did you come up with this, and what does it look like?
Yeah. So when they told me I was a bottleneck, right, I knew I had to come up with a way to give them, you know, the authority and the empowerment and the trust, right, to make those decisions without me. But at the same time, like, I needed to feel comfortable letting that control go. And I sat down one day, you know, shut off everything on my computer, like closed my door, and just went into deep thought about, you know, what are the criteria for the decisions that I, you know, want them to make without me? Like, what are the things that don't really matter, right? Like putting, you know, changing the coffee in the coffee room or whatever, right? And so I made a list of some of those things, like, you know, hiring staff accountants, et cetera, et cetera. Not that they don't matter, but they didn't really need, you know, a CEO's approval, especially if there have been four or five people already in the interview process. So anyway, I made a list of all of those things, and I really looked at them and I thought, there's two things that these decisions have in common. One, these decisions are inconsequential. Who cares, you know, if you change the coffee and it turns out to be crap? So what? Change it again, right? I really don't need to be involved in that decision. Who cares if you, you know, give a client a 5% discount? Like, so what? You know, it takes more money and time for me as a CEO to make that decision than it does, you know, in terms of cost to the company to give that discount. So that was the first thing that they had in common, was that the decisions were inconsequential. And the second thing was that they were reversible, right? And so, like the coffee example, you can reverse it. You can change the coffee. You know, the client discount decision, maybe not so reversible, but on a you know, spectrum of things, you kind of understand what I'm saying. And so I created this matrix with these two, you know, like the x-axis being consequentiality, you know, high consequences, low consequences, and the y-axis being reversibility, you know, things that are highly irreversible and things that are, you know, highly reversible. And so things in this like lower quadrant, I just tell them, decide, you know, it's inconsequential and it's reversible. Just decide. You don't need to let me know. On the total opposite side, right? Things that are highly consequential, like changing the project management system, you know, changing the payroll system. You know, I want you to consult with me, right? Because these are things that are, they have high consequences and it's really hard to reverse them. They're pretty irreversible. And so with this decision matrix, my team is able to ask themselves, is this decision reversible or not? And what are the consequences? And those are the guidelines that they use to decide how much of my involvement they need.
That is such a helpful tool for all of our listeners. And I love how practical that is with your X axis, your Y axis. And that is going to free up so much frustration and time that leaders and business owners are putting into helping their team make these decisions. But it makes me think, Shirley, we have to have the right team in place.
100%.
In order for this to work. So I think that hiring and delegating tend to be two of the most challenging parts of leadership. What lessons have you learned about building the right team? And how do you know when someone is or isn't a fit?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you know, good observation, Kristen. And actually, it's hiring is important, delegating is important, but also there's something in between those two, which is really retaining, right? And building a strong company culture, right? Because you can do all the great hiring in the world, but if you don't know how to retain those amazing people and build that, you know, high performing company culture, then there's not going to be anyone to delegate to, right? So I think it's three things, right? Hire, you know, I call it the three R's: recruit, retain, release. Recruit the right people, retain them by creating a good culture, and then release them, right? Empower them, delegate decisions to them. So, you know, to answer your question, believe it or not, in 2016, when I hired those two people, the bookkeeper and the controller, they were the first two out of 100 people that I ended up hiring and firing in 4 years. So between 2016 and 2020, I literally hired and fired over 100 people. I made so many mistakes. And it was really, I mean, I a couple of times I was like, what in the world am I doing? I should just go back to, you know, having a job somewhere. But you know, one day I just said, I have to figure out what am I doing wrong? And I sat down and I went through every single one of those 100 hires. And I found the common threads. You know, one common thread that's very relevant now, for example, was that, you know, I had a lot of candidates that were really just making or looking to make a lifestyle change. They wanted to work remotely. You know, they wanted to move. They wanted to make more money, you know, and there was no urgency in the reason that they were motivated to look for a job. And that ended up being one of the really important data points that I added to my now recruiting process that really helped me weed out the right candidates. You know, for example, you know, when you go to the doctor or the hospital, they give you a pain scale, like, you know, 1 to 10 with happy smiling faces to sad smile. And they ask you, like, how much pain are you in on a scale of 1 to 10, right? So, you know, people that are looking for a lifestyle change, they're not in a lot of pain, right? They're ones and twos. But people that are in a toxic work environment, they have a bad boss, they don't feel appreciated, they don't feel valued. Those are the people that are highly motivated to make sure that they find the right fit, okay? And you want those candidates that are as interested and incentivized to as you are to finding the right long-term fit. Whereas the lifestyle candidates, you know, it'll be just as easy for them to accept your position as it is for them to leave and go accept someone else's position, right? So I think that's like one of the things. And so building a recruiting process around, you know, that pain scale, obviously skills, experience, education, culture fit is huge, you know, technical skills, personality, job profile. We have a 9-step recruiting process that we take people through, and it is in depth, but as a result of it, we have less than 5% unwanted turnover. And in fact, we've got people who went through our recruiting process, didn't end up getting an offer, but gave us a 5-star review on Glassdoor because the recruiting process helped them figure out who they are, what they want. And so, I think there's a lot that goes into making sure that you're hiring the right person. And people do it too quickly. You know, people hire too fast and fire too slow, and it needs to be the opposite. You know, I tell people, think sloth, right? Sloths are very slow. That is how slowly people should really be hiring. They should be, you know, hiring way ahead, thinking ahead, and not hiring out of desperation.
That's huge, because you tend to hire fast when you're desperate. If you're overwhelmed, you needed this position months ago and you're finally getting around to doing it. So Working ahead on your hiring can help with that. And I want to know more about finding out candidates' urgency. That's a huge difference maker that you just described. So are your candidates looking to make a lifestyle change, or are they highly motivated to make sure they find the right fit? And you talked about the pain scale. Do you ask candidates to rate themselves on a scale of 1 to 10? Or how do you actually find out a candidate's urgency level in your 9-step selection process?
I mean, you just ask them, why are you looking? Why are you looking to leave? And sometimes they're not telling you the full truth. And so it's really important to dig deeper. I had one guy who, said, oh yeah, I'm in a toxic environment. I have a bad boss. And I was like, really? Tell me more about that. And the more I prodded him, I could tell that that wasn't really what was going on. It was more like he was the problem. I was giving a talk about this actually to a Vistage group. And one person in the audience asked me, you know, how do you know when a candidate is actually, you know, working in a toxic environment, or if they're the problem? And I said, well, you got to ask them to describe the situation they're in. And if they can describe a situation that they're in such a way that is so emotional and powerful that it makes the hairs on your arm stick up. I'll never forget, I had this boss who, it was in Beverly Hills. He put me up in this amazing, beautiful office with a glass wall behind me overlooking the Hollywood sign. And in front of me, another glass wall just overlooking the rest of the office. And he, you know, he was a, if you can imagine, right? Spray tan, bleach blonde hair, white, you know, business suit with the, you know, shirt buttoned down with the hair coming out, jewelry and everything. And he would always wear this huge ring, this huge diamond ring. And he would walk by my office, and every time he would look inside, and every time that I was on the phone with someone, he would take his big diamond ring and he would bang it against that glass door and glass wall. He just wanted my attention. He wanted me to know that no matter who I was on the phone with, nobody else mattered but him. That is a toxic environment. That is a bad boss. So if your candidates can explain their situation in that detail, then you know they're not lying.
It takes me back to one of the roles I had when I was recruiting, and my old leader would come into some of my interviews and insert himself, and the things he would say would blow my mind. And I'd worked so hard to get some of these candidates to come in because I was recruiting for a commission-only role, and he comes in and just starts sharing all this stuff. And I thought, what is wrong? This is not going to work. This is not going to work. Really tough.
That's familiar.
This has been a wonderful conversation. And Shirley, you have left our listeners with the decision matrix. You've left our listeners with some ideas around hiring the right individuals, the framework of the three R's: recruit, retain, and release. And release meaning empower your team to delegate and to make decisions. I'm curious, what habits or routines have been most critical in your journey to elite achievement?
Oh, Kristen, that's the toughest question of all. I mean, I wish I could say that I have consistent habits and routines. I can tell you that I know what I'm supposed to be doing, but do I do them consistently? And can I say that they're habits and routines? No, I am still, you know, trying to parent myself into, you know, consistent self-care, right? That includes time for myself, exercise, eating right, sleeping enough, going to bed on time, you know, drinking water, meditating, you know, taking clarity breaks, reading, writing, therapy, right? We all, it's the same thing we all know we're supposed to be doing. And to be honest, I'm still on that journey. So I can't, in all honesty, say that any of these are habits yet or routines yet. I'm still trying to perfect that.
It can also be overwhelming, all the things that we should be doing. And I don't know about you, Shirley, but I sometimes feel behind if I'm not doing all the things that have made other people successful. And I've had several different morning routines in what I'll call my professional career. I used to have a really robust morning routine. And as my business has grown and I'm traveling more, and I've really had to pare that down. And I have found for me what helps is movement and meditation. If I get other things in, fantastic. But if I can move, and hopefully that's a good workout, sometimes it's 10,000 steps a day. And if I can meditate, even if it's for 5 minutes in between a client call, it can make a huge difference in my world.
Yeah, I think the key is exactly what you said, is figuring out what works for you, right? For you, it's movement and meditation. You know, for someone else, it might be just sleep, right? For someone else, it just might be awareness, you know, but figuring out what works for you, and, you know, trying to stop comparing yourself to everyone else, you know, I should do this, I should do that because so-and-so is doing it. You know, we're so competitive. We're so, you know, that inner critic we have to give more voice to our inner champion. I'll just leave it at that.
Well, now I'm curious. Talk to me about the difference between inner critic, inner champion, and how you came up with this idea of giving more voice to inner champion.
Oh my goodness. I was at a Vistage meeting a couple of weeks ago. They have a speaker. I think his name was Charlie Smith. So I got it from him. But he talks about how our inner critics are so damn loud, and we give so much power and voice and volume. But we all have an inner champion, but we never give the microphone to that voice, right? And so the inner champion sounds like, you know, I'm Shirley Williani. I am the founder and CEO of ALC. I built a business from the ground up, and I am a mother. I am a wife. I am, you know, a strong, powerful woman. Like, that is what my inner champion sounds like. And so I make it a thing every day to say those words to myself out loud. And that way I, you know, sort of quiet my inner critic. We all have that, and it's okay to have that a little bit, but I think it's important to have that inner champion's voice be louder, because who else is going to cheer you on, right? If you don't cheer yourself on.
Well, that sure sounds like a habit that is very critical in your journey to elite success.
Oh, okay. I accept.
We found one. Shirley, this has been great. Thank you so much for your time. Where can our listeners go to learn more about you and the work that you do?
Yes, it's been my pleasure, Kristen, to be here. Thank you for having me. So, two places. My personal website is shirleywilliani.com, ShirleyWilliani, Williani, just one L. I'm also the CEO and founder of outsourced accounting, CFO advisory, HR consulting called A La Carte Solutions, ALC for short. That website is alacarte-solutions.com.
We will make sure to put those links in our show notes. And until next time, Elite Achievers, celebrate your wins, reflect on your lessons, and consistently show up with the mindset and habits that will elevate your success. Remember, progress is made one step at a time. By listening to today's episode, you've taken an important step toward achieving remarkable results. If you're ready to continue your journey, visit my website, kristenburke.com, for resources, tools, and strategies designed to help you experience elite achievement. Subscribe now so you never miss an episode, and let's keep embracing the mindset, effort, and values that drive consistent elite performance. Thank you for listening.